Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Grace Lynn. She's an award-winning and best-selling author and illustrator, and tonight we're talking about her new book, The Gate, The Girl, and The Dragon. Grace, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
You always make me smile.
Oh, thank you.
This is a fascinating book. We were talking about this off mic. As an older adult, I read this book and it was really interesting. So although I know you're writing ostensibly for a younger audience, I want to recommend this book for adults too, because it's a wonderful, beautiful book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know what? I think one of the reasons why it works for all ages is because the themes of this book really came together because of the during the pandemic. I think it's like all of us recovering from the pandemic.
And oh
like
my God! You don't know how many people I've interviewed, authors and artists,
yes.
where the project was inspired or it somehow occurred during the pandemic.
Exactly.
Well, in your author's note at the end, you write that you grow your ideas. Just flesh that out for me.
Yeah, so for me, I am what you call a plotter. So authors are usually, they say, are you a plotter or a pantser? And plotters are people who like to plan out their stories ahead of time, and sometimes have an outline. So I'm a plotter. So I collect all these different ideas. And then I let them grow until I can make it into a outline, and then I start to write. Sometimes, though, it takes a long time to be able to have enough have these ideas fully fleshed out before I can put them in an outline and start writing. So that's why I like to grow these ideas. I get all these little ideas, and I kind of like keep them away, and I tuck them away in my brain or in my notebook, and I hope that they kind of grow into something bigger and bigger until I can put them into an outline and write about them. So,
well, as you write about this book, it has an international series of events that inspired you to sort of put it all together and weave it into a story.
Yes. Yes, there's all different things. So this book is a little bit different than some of my other books.
Oh, yeah.
So those who know my books, like Where the Mountain Meets the Moon or When the Sea Turns Silver, it's similar in the fact that it uses has little stories mixed into the bigger stories. But this book, it's in those books, my past books, it was just older ancient legends and folk tales. And this book, I really mixed old legends with contemporary urban legends. So so there's a story in the book where there's a story that's actually, I'll just tell you the real story. So when I was in Shanghai in 2017, I was driving along the Shanghai Expressway with some friends. And while we were there, we passed this beautiful gilded metal column in the middle of the expressway. And I was like, what is this column doing here? And they told me this urban legend that said that the construction company was unable to build the highway until they built that column there to appease a dragon that was sleeping underneath in the land. And I just thought that was so fascinating and so amazing that like these legends from the past are still with us in the future. And that's kind of what I wanted to put in the book.
Well, the characters come from all over. From Leshan, the seven cats of Shangtan Street.
Exactly.
I love that. A Beijing bell tower. The bell tower, a bell, is very important in this book. It's just amazing. They come from all over. Do you bring a sketchbook with you?
I bring a notebook with me, everyone. I write it all down.
But you're also, the art in this book is your art, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's wonderful art. So do you sketch while you travel?
When I travel, I do sketch a bit, but mainly it's jotting down things. And when I travel, it's mainly messy notes and like a scribble. I talk to my artist friends, and there's like drawers and there are painters, right? And
it's always a duality.
Yeah, it's duality. It's like there's people like people who do like graphic novel, people who like draw, those are more like drawers, and they're amazing. And and I do, of course, you have to be a drawer in order to paint, and you have to paint in order to do a graphic novel, things like that. But my joy comes really from the actual coloring and the paint. So I'm much more of a slower artist. So usually I like take the photos and then I do the photo reference and then I draw and paint from that.
it's first of all, the structure of this book is beautiful. Even right down to the size, it's this sort of perfect small size. It's a thick book, but even the end papers, even the edges of the pages, talk to me about it. I mean, you must give a lot of thought to how the book will feel in a person's hand.
Oh, definitely. So so this book, along with my other books, like Where the Mountain Meets the Moon, they're all inspirations from Chinese folk tales. And these Chinese folk tales are folk tales that I read when I was like in third grade. Now, when I was in third grade, I was not really interested in my Asian heritage. So my mom, to try to get me interested, she snuck in these Chinese folk tale books onto the bookshelf and hoped that I would find them and read them. So I did find them and read them, but I was not impressed with these Chinese folktale books. They had been Chinese stories that had been translated into English very plainly. They were printed on this really cheap paper. The illustrations were not very well done, these just plain little black and white illustrations. And I remember reading those books and comparing them to these beautiful full-color illustrations of the European fairy tales that that were in the library, like these Edmund Dulac books and these Arthur Rackham books, and with like, you know, how they had the gold edges and everything. And I remember kind of feeling like, oh, these Chinese stories aren't as good, and my Chinese heritage is kind of inferior, because like that just kind of reinforced that feeling. And so now, many, many years later, now that like I'm an adult, and now I don't feel that way about my heritage anymore. I don't want any child to pick up my books that are based on these Asian folktales to feel the way I did when I picked up those cheap books. So I work really, really hard to make these books as beautiful as possible. I really want any kid to pick it up and be like, this is valuable. These stories are valuable. The culture in here is very special. It's a treasure. And that's really what I try really hard to do with these books. So, yeah, so we pay attention to every little detail. I try to get the publisher to every book go a little bit more to make the book more beautiful.
I really appreciate it. And it's funny because if you're sitting there reading the book, you know, there are times that you're just sort of letting your mind wander and you have the book in your hand and you're feeling the weight of the book, the edges of the pages, you know, which are beautifully designed. They're red with images of clouds and dragons. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a very special experience reading the book.
Yes, I'm so glad you feel that way. And also, it's also because, you know, the whole thing is in the book is about, I don't know if you gave a summary of the book before I came on, but the book is, it's kind of like an Asian American Narnia, where it's like, the wardrobe, the Chinatown gate is like a portal into another world. So I really wanted the book to almost feel like a portal into another world too.
Yeah, it really is. It really is like that. Let's talk about a couple of things that are in the book. And I want to start with a very basic symbol and image. And you're going to have to forgive me throughout this interview for my mispronunciation of traditional Chinese.
No worries.
No, I'm very embarrassed. Even when I went to a website, by the way, I would listen to the voice and I go, I don't know. There's in Chinese art, there's a flower, a treasure flower, the Bao Shan flower. Uh-huh. And talk to me about that, because that's a big image throughout the story.
Yeah. So the Bao Shan flower is, you will see it if you ever go to a fancy Chinese banquet. It's very common on porcelain, and if you see, once you see it, you'll see it. You'll remember seeing it. Like it's very beloved and used very often. So it's a flower that has been beloved for centuries.
But it's not an actual flower.
No, but yeah, it's actually a flower of fiction. So what happened was a long time ago, an artist put together the parts of a peony, a rose, and a lotus, and created this bouching flower and used it as a motif. And people just loved it so much that they've used it over and over again. And like I said, it's been a beloved symbol. And so that's kind of how I feel about my book. I've taken all these kind of things, like I took the old myths and I took the new myths. I took American culture, I took Asian culture, and I put it together and I've made it into this new flower. So that's kind of how I feel about my book, that it's kind of like a bouching flower that way.
It really is. And one of the central sort of almost archetypical concepts that you use in the book is, as you mentioned before, is the idea of a gate. As a gate is you go through a gate, and sometimes you're in the place where you started, or the gate can be a sort of a transporter to you to another world. And here it definitely is. Here, a specific gate is the world between the world we know and the world of, is it the Gongshi?
The Gongshi, yes.
Yeah, you got to explain the Gongshi, because this is a fascinating idea.
Yeah, so the Gongshi are spirits that are born when a special stone is carved into a statue. And this special stone has a spirit inside of it, but it only really comes to life after someone carves it into a statue, and it gives it the personality. And so these spirits are good spirits. The Gongshi are always good spirits, and their job is to protect people and to help them as much as possible. So that's their job, is to help people. But, you know, like everybody, they need a break from the job once in a while. And when they want to take a break and go home and rest, they go through the old city gates. And when they go through the old city gates, they enter into their world, the world of the Gongshi. So in my book, the old city gate is actually a portal to the world of the Gongshi.
It's an amazing place, too. Now, they can see us, but we can't see them.
Yes, and they can see us. They talk to us, but we don't really hear them. When we hear them, we think it's our own thoughts. So they affect the world around us. So, like, I like to tell kids, like, oh, have you ever stumbled and almost fallen but caught yourself, or had something, like, almost hit you but missed you? And I'm like, maybe you were saved by a Gongshi. They might have batted it away. They might have caught you before you fell, because, like I said, their job is to kind of watch over us and help as much as possible.
And all the other central characters are the stone lions that guard the gates.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them has a ball, and one of them has a little lion. Talk about that, because it's Jin, that little lion, who really is the sort of the person, the thing that really motivates this whole story.
Yes. So if you ever go to a Chinatown gate, most of the time they have two stone lions guarding the gate. And if you look closely at the lions, one is always holding a ball, and the other is holding a stone, a lion cub. The ball is supposed to symbolize, like, the unity of the world, and this cub is supposed to symbolize a thriving future. And so that's why these lions are supposed to kind of symbolize, like, the yin and yang, the balance of the world, and its protection. So in my book, these statues all have spirits in them, both lions and the lion cub. The lion cub, though, if you ever go and look at the statue, you'll notice the lion cub is always looking upward. It's being held down and it's looking up at the sky. And so that's why Jin, who is the lion cub, the spirit of the lion cub, doesn't really have too much interest in watching people, because he's always off dreaming in the sky. And so he's less vigilant than the other stone statue spirits, and he causes a bit of a problem.
A bit? He causes a huge problem.
Yes.
we won't give away what that is, but he ends up, he's on in our world. And visible, and
yes,
they can't get back through the gate. And
yes,
the Gongshi on the other side can't get through the gate on their side.
Yes, he gets...
What a mess!
Through his actions, he closes the gate, and he gets stuck on our side of the world, gets stuck in our world, and he traps all the gungs on the other side.
Oh my God. It's about, you couldn't get for a bigger mess.
Yes.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch, my returning guest tonight, and it's always a pleasure to talk to her. It's Grace Lynn, award-winning and best-selling author and illustrator. Tonight we're talking about her new book, The Gate, The Girl, and The Dragon. So we've talked about The Gate. The girl's fascinating character because you're not sure in the beginning exactly what she's about in her relationship to other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your daughter?
Is that my daughter? No, that one is not. I have almost, usually when people ask me that question, I can always say yes because it's almost always my daughter. But this time, no. I think this book is a little interesting where I think all the characters are different versions of myself.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think they're all like even Jin is the impetuous, the kind of thoughtless, but the well-meaning is like all different parts of myself, just unrealized or emphasized certain characteristics.
Well, it's interesting because it's got to do with the way you see yourself too, mm-hmm. as from both worlds.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Sort of a creative, artistic world that was inspired by China and Chinese mm-hmm. culture, and then the contemporary world here in the United States. And there you're able to sort of go back and forth.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah. And it's kind of that nice. I feel like all authors, we always write ourselves, right? One way or another.
Now, I got to ask you about specifics without hopefully giving away too many plot points. There's a seam ripper tool. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a character, the sculptor,
mm-hmm.
Who doesn't realize what he's doing. I mean, he doesn't understand. But there's this weird tool, and mm-hmm. you have a drawing of it, and it heads up different chapters. Mm-hmm. Is that an actual carving tool?
So a seam ripper is an actual tool that they use for sewing. So,
because it didn't look good for stone.
No, it's not. So the ball that the stone lion holds is actually supposed to symbolize a silk stuffed ball. It's
yeah.
supposed to be made out of silk.
It's soft.
And yes, it's supposed to be soft. And yeah, so the sculptor is carving a seam ripper, which is usually just this kind of cheap plastic handle with a like very flimsy like metal thing, because that's what they use to like rip out thread. But he is carving one out of stone, and because he can carve one out of this special stone, he's able to cause quite a bit of havoc and affect that stone ball, stone slash silk ball.
Now, as the title says, there's also a dragon, and Chinese dragons are great. There's so many stories that there exist around dragons, and they come in all sizes.
Mm-hmm.
There are two main dragons here.
Yes.
And one of them looks like a worm when it's found, except it's a worm with a huge mustache.
Yes.
And through a thing that happens to him, he is able to mature into a full-sized dragon. But there's another dragon that's really wild.
Yeah.
He's got a dragon head, but a worm body.
Yes. And that is based on a real Chinese
story. I thought so. That seemed so unique.
Yes. It's a real Chinese folktale where two worms were given the task to furrow a land by a goddess. And they said, if you furrow this land for like 9 years, 9 months, and 99 days, I will take you and go to the Long River. You'll be transformed into a dragon. And one of the worms does 9 days, nine years, 9 months, and 98 days, figuring like, what's 1 day? We could skip. I'll skip that one. And he's only partially transformed.
Wow.
He goes to the river, and only his head transforms, and the rest of him remains a worm. So I think it's some kind of, I'm pretty sure it was some kind of story, like warning story, like teaching story to kids, like make sure you finish your job.
Well, yeah. And then the other worm is like really working hard. First of all, the land
yes.
is like awful. It's like really hard land to work. And I definitely empathize with skipping out on the last day after you've done it that long. But if you live in the world of dragons, don't do that.
So don't skimp out on your job. That's really what I'm saying. And
you have a great drawing of him, or a painting of him, in the book too. He's in the water. Mm-hmm. And he looks like we're in some odd rocks are exposed at low tide.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, wow, it's a full-size dragon. Then you realize he's got this puny body. Wow.
Yes. So it's like the waves are kind of hiding that. And that's why that's one of the reasons why he hangs out there, is because he's able to camouflage the fact that he doesn't have a full body. And he's able to lie about why he doesn't have why you can't see his body.
Now, another character that's in the world of the Gongxi is Confucius.
Oh, yes.
So is that the historical Confucius?
Yeah, well, it's a statue. These are all statue spirits. So these are all statues. So they have the characteristics of the characters that they are carved at. But it's a little complicated, because whoever carved that, whatever the carver felt, whatever the artist felt their statue should have. So whatever the artist felt Confucius should be like.
This happens. Grace.
Yes.
Are you going to continue to write books for this? This is sort of a older, young audience. And you've done wonderful books for very young audiences. And you've also done books for adults. Like, I think about the Chinese food book.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you get the most satisfaction out of?
I get the most satisfaction out of writing my stories, honestly. Like, it's really the stories that decide whether or not they want to be for an older audience or a younger audience. And so
That's fascinating.
If the stories come to me and they decide and people decide who they're for. So my joy is just to be able to take those ideas and make them into stories, and hope that the audience, no matter what age.
Okay, let me just make sure I understand this. So you just write the story because of the inspiration, and then when it's done, you decide what age group it's appropriate for.
Well, I kind of know. I have more of the idea I get the idea. And
okay.
Probably around, you know, in between, when, you know, I was saying I was a plotter.
That's right.
Around the plotting time, I kind of get a good grasp of who it's probably going to be for. And then when I'm done, the publisher pretty much seals the deal.
Oh, okay. Now, I, because you wrote that book, the tremendous book about the background for popular Chinese foods, I was looking for food in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it. You had leek dumplings, egg tarts, radish mm-hmm. cakes, and uh-huh. lotus leaf wrapped rice.
Mm-hmm.
Are those actual all real dishes, right?
Those are all real dishes. And if you notice, even the egg tarts, they are, except for the egg tarts, I guess, but they were vegetarian because the worm doesn't eat meat.
That's right. Can you talk about, again, we just have a few minutes left, about the cats? The seven cats of Lee Street, they each represent something different.
Yes, and they are based on real cats that are in Suzhou. They're actually on the street is Shantung Street in Suzhou, and you will find them usually in front of a bridge, and they are very old and ancient, and each one is supposed to symbolize a certain characteristic.
It's prosperity, happiness, prosperity, knowledge, health.
Knowledge, yes.
Blessing. Now, talk to me about blessing. Is that you're receiving a blessing because of the cat?
That's the idea. It's like, so people like to go and like maybe if they're going to get married, they'll go and pat the cat.
Oh, cool.
And hope they'll get a blessing, you know, things like that.
And then there's refinement, which is really, that's a very adult idea, and opportunity.
Yes. So obviously these are the real ones. That's the real characteristics of the real cats, because I would never have chosen refinement on my own. I would have chosen something else. But refinement is what one of them is, and I was like, okay. so that's why it's refinement. But it does make sense. I think it's another way another way of Asian saying like betterment, you know, to make yourself better and things like that. But I think refinement seemed better than betterment.
Well, with that, my guest tonight has been, and returning, again, always a pleasure to talk to, is Grace Lin, award-winning and best-selling author and illustrator. And you should see the illustrations for this book. They're wonderful. And tonight we're talking about her new book, The Gate, The Girl, and The Dragon. Grace, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. So much fun.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.